You want to have the right founders, and it's equally important that the founder, and probably even more important in the early rounds, that you like the founder more than the idea, right? Ideas are a dime a dozen. I have 100 ideas a week that I think of, but execution is what.
Welcome to the podcast. So today we're joined by an amazing guest, Michael Gruen. Some of you may know him from YouTube or like his different things that he's been doing. And so he's a phenomenal guest. And so Michael, like, can we start with like Talent X and managing some of the biggest creators on TikTok? So what did that experience teach you about creators, working with creators, and also in your personal life as well? Like, how did that help you? How did that shape you into who you are today?
I would actually say it didn't really shape me. In fact, I think I should shape it. So, you know, a little bit of background on this. I started a company with a guy named Jace Norman, who was Henry Danger on Nickelodeon years before this, called Creator Edge Media. And that was my first foray into influencers. And that was when I kind of started really understanding and learning the early days of social media and of internet creators, how they were, kind of what they're prone to, what it's like. Talent X kind of honestly started a little bit on accident. So I was friends with Bryce for a long time before this, and just from being in LA, and Bryce had Josh over at his house, and from there, like, I saw that these guys were really big. Like, Musical.ly was blowing up, like, it was becoming TikTok, and I saw them, these guys, becoming famous to young audiences, but nobody really knew who they were on the street. Like, it was weird. Like, you'd have like a bunch of kids run over, but like the parents would be like weirded out. And I just observed it enough. And I was like, you know, I had a background in real business, like having run two different companies before. And I went over to Josh and I was like, look, I think there's something special with you. I see that. Obviously Bryce, you know, had been famous in the past and then kind of fell off and was trying to come back. And I was like, look, like, I'm really interested in seeing through what could possibly be here. And that's how it started. Originally, I was going to be an advisor and just help out. But kind of like as we started building it, it took more and more of my time and was kind of forced to be full time on it. And my real, the only reason why I even went into that field coming from tech was I really wanted to prove, I guess, to myself in some regard, but also to Hollywood in general and to the world at large, that one, when people say it's impossible, they don't really mean it, right? We my goal was to keep bringing it to the mainstream to show that it's all fungible. But number two is that entrepreneurship at its core is what is entrepreneurship. It doesn't matter where you're being an entrepreneur. You can learn the specifics of an industry, or you can have a partner that knows the specifics. Fundamentals of business are fundamentals of business. And I think I proved that through multiple different, you know, sockets of what we've done. And for me, that's really what motivates me. The ability to break down barriers and break norms and really show people like the insides and outs of different industries is what makes it fun for me. And I'm a disruptor at heart. That's what I like to do. It's not about fame for me. It's not about money. It's really about being a disruptor.
I think that's amazing that, you know, you broke the barriers. You were such a disruptor in the industry. So, like, after working with various content creators, so what is your view on content creator and the creator economy? And, like, since you've been involved in that space for, like, quite a while, like, could you just share a bit on your outlook on the industry?
So I'm very bullish on creator-owned companies. Like, I think that creator-owned companies, like the Mr. Beast of the world, you know, Josh, Bryce, that own companies and use, like, you know, use that to propel into something big, I'm very bullish on. What I'm not bullish on are companies that are going towards, that are catered towards creators. The reason is, if you really start to think about what creators are, it's a bunch of potheads that, hey, they don't do much every day, right? Like Josh was the exception. Bryce was the exception. You know, really, Olisway was the exception, right? Like, they all work really, I mean, I can tell you firsthand, like, Griffin used to wake up super early. Anthony would be up at 4 or 5, 6 a.m. working. You know, I'd get up the same time as Anthony. Like, some of those guys were exceptionally hardworking, and that's why it was able to work. And even in the beginning, it wasn't as much, but with enough pushing, we were able to get, you know, some of those guys to really break down the mold and really be different. But yeah, I represented about 250 clients at the company, and I can tell you about 25 of them were really put in work and really, really cared about what they did and really were passionate, but and loved it and really viewed it as a job. right? Like most people, it's kind of like, oh, but you post videos and whatever. Like I'm not bullish on the creator economy as a general rule. I'm bullish on specific creators all day long, and I think that it really comes down to the bets you take, not about the industry at large. And I tend to be anti the creator economy at its general core. It's why we didn't really invest a lot into the creator economy at its general at its burgeoning thesis. We did invest into, I love celebrity companies. I think they're great. I think they're going to come bigger and bigger. And I think that with the rise of AI, Hollywood being threatened, I think that creators are going to be the future of real content, of real human content. And I think that's going to be an interesting way that grows into communities and where that spark, what that'll spark can be a really exciting time for the creator economy. But I'm not bullish on, anything that caters towards like trying to get creators to work hard or, oh, just sign up here. Like these guys don't drive as much traffic as people think generally. And these guys also, more importantly, don't do the work that people think they're going to do.
I think that's a really great point that you made about, being bullish on specific creators, and definitely had my share of people who've been bullish on me. And so, yeah, so my next question is, so you mentioned something about AI, and you've also had a bit of a foray into AI as well through Elysium Innovation. So would you just share a bit more about what work you're doing in the AI space, and like what's your thesis on the space? Like what are you looking at currently? Anything that comes top
Yeah,
of mind for you?
I'll be honest. I think AI is going to be everything. I think that what people don't understand about AI is really that these things are logic engines. They're not. When you ask a question to ChatGPT and you get an answer, it's predicting based on a model, right? It's not actually giving you. It doesn't know anything. It only knows what's in front of it within its token limit. But what it's doing is really very similar to the brain, the way the brain mechanics work on a human. And these things are thinking. We predict the next word when people speak. It's how we're predicting our own words. That is how we communicate. We are about to hit a point in the world where this thing called Moore's Law is going to be proven to be obsolete, which essentially is how many servers are online, right? It actually grows based on the humans every year, which now we'll have these machines that will turn on other machines. This is the first time in human history, or at least that we know of, that machines have been able to think on their own, make decisions on their own, and can grow autonomously, right? It's a frightening time, but it's also a amazing time. It's a new paradigm. It really is a new world that we're about to unlock, right? The printing press, while it did disrupt a lot of people and people were nervous, it didn't think on its own. You needed a human to run the machine. You don't need that anymore. And that is the reason why when people say like, oh, like we've heard this before, I beg them to please not think that way, because it's if you think that way, the world will not be a good safe place. If you realize this is a new technology that can do new and incredible things, if we do it, if we handle it right, we have a real shot at making illnesses obsolete, at really revolutionizing to a point where it's not that we're living in a socialist state where it's like we have to, everything is just, we don't own anything. It's the opposite. It's everything is so common and so much and so much abundance that it's dirt cheap to get it, right? It doesn't cost, it's not gonna be hard to get it, right? That's the world I want to live in. I don't want to live in a world where it's controlled, right? I want to live in a world where there's so much of it, and it's so common. There's so much food in the world that nobody's starving, right? That's the state we want to live in. I want to live in, and that's very possible with AI. It really is, but it's going to take people realizing that this is not like any other revolution before, and this is incredibly different. What I'm doing in this space specifically is these things called AI agents, which are essentially they lean on a OpenAI or any other LLM as a logic engine. So instead of it being the actual like information giver, which is what most people use it for, right? Those things are not very accurate at its core. What I use it for is we use on it to go, okay. Let's say I give it a task, right? I want it to send these 25 emails out and call this person for me and that person, whatever. I give it a list. I want it to use ChatGPT and go, ChatGPT, break this down into 20 different tasks, or break this down into as many tasks as needed, right? Kind of make it easy to understand. And then using APIs through the internet to go and basically be an agent, having agency, literally the ability to move, and to go accomplish these tasks, leaning on OpenAI as a parser essentially. And its brain as a thinking engine to accomplish a set of goals. That is the future of AI. It's not your essay at school that the ChatGPT gives you.
I think the future of AI is very bright. And as you said, I really love what you're doing in the AI agent space. So my next question is more about your foray into venture capital. So you have your own VC arm called Animal Capital. So what does its investment thesis of Animal Capital, and like, who do you normally invest in? And maybe if you could share like some of the breakout portfolio companies you've had.
Yeah,
so the audience can know more about like what you've been building on the VC side.
We're agnostic. I mean, we invest in good founders. And at the end of the day, is like, I VC to me is really it's a marriage, right? Like, if you're a real investor and you're in this game for the long run, you want to have the right founders, and it's equally important that the founder, and probably even more important in the early rounds, that you like the founder more than the idea. Right? Ideas are a dime a dozen. I have 100 ideas a week that I think of, but execution is what matters. And if you're in the trenches with somebody, when things go bad, do you want to be with this person or not? Like, if you cannot, for me, it's really like, if I get off the phone and I can't stand the guy, I don't give a shit what his idea is. I'm not going to invest. At the end of the day, it really is goes with the gut of how we feel. And you know, I'm not even the main managing partner on it. There's a guy named Marshall Sandman who works incredibly hard every day, and he's the principal of the fund, and he's done an incredible job at deploying the capital.
Sure, I think you answered that pretty well. Like, I think I understood more about Animal Capital. So who have been some of the best founders that have pitched you? And like, if you could share, like, what made that pitch stand out?
I mean, you know, some of them have become really good friends. Like, there's a guy named Steve Schwartz, who a company called WAP.io. They just raised a pretty big Series A, like incredible founder. They're basically the Amazon of the internet. They sell like bots and Discord channels. Like, they're incredible. I mean, the founders are just like robust, young, like just smart as shit, you know? And they work hard. Like, they're in the office every day till like 9, 10 PM. Like, they just have every intangible you can want, in a founder. And they've been incredible. Whatnot is one of our portfolio companies. Incredible. You know, it goes down. I mean, like, some of the founders, like Nick, there's a couple of founders. Sheridan Claiborne is a really interesting one. That's that's incredible from Lend Table. His story is just wild. I mean, he was started trading and started buying in like bots and shoes and all that when he was like 12 years old. Just an incredible story. Nick Donahue founded Atmos. You know, like I, for me, it's about following these people. It's not really about following the journey of the actual company, because most companies pivot. You know, it's like you want a founder that you want to see, be excited for. You want to make an intro. Intro. And others are like Michael Karkaris from Deliver. Like they just sold for $2.1 billion to Shopify. You know, so we've had some incredible wins. Obviously. Some sad losses and some founders that we, you know, wish the outcomes were different. But at the end of the day, is like it's a business. We're excited to be along with them, and we hope that they keep bringing us their next companies. And you know, we're open for business, and we love all submissions. So you know, no one should feel hesitant to reach out to myself or Marshall and pitch their company.
For sure. And I think you made a really great point about how you have to follow the people and the story as well, like that they bring to the table.
Especially in the early rounds.
Yeah. So what are your views on storytelling and how a founder can be better equipped to, like, you know the know-hows of storytelling and like stuff like that? Because that's, as you said, it's like pretty important at the early stages of a company.
I don't want to tell you, because I think when people know it, then they're trying to do it. I think it's a natural thing. I think people that first of all have the goods, they know how to say they have the goods. Like, you know, it's the people that you shout out from the rooftop that you get scared about, right? Like the people that over prepare. I think it hurts founders both ways if I would answer that question. I think the best thing is founders should go in and do what they're intuitively thinking, right? Like the biggest thing I see in technologists is a lot of them don't have a real sense of product. Don't really understand what humans think and feel. What makes Jeff Bezos so amazing and why he's who he is not because he builds the best technology necessarily, but because he knows how to build the best technology in the most intuitive way. He knows how to build Amazon, which is, people don't realize the systems that Amazon is. I actually, it's funny. I ordered something for someone across the world a couple days ago. 2 days later, they're in his house building it for him. It's a crazy thought, right? Like the amount of coordination that these systems are building and doing, these AIs, like they've had for 10 years, 20 years, like it's incredible. That's what makes Jeff Bezos great. When you go on Amazon, it feels like you're buying at your local supermarket. It's super easy, right? It's super easy. They're making everything so easy, yet the technology is so deep. That is what makes an entrepreneur brilliant. And those people, they naturally know how to do that. And I don't want someone to come and fake it on a call. I want to see people being raw and being able to tell both the positive and negatives from the call. So I think answering that would be counterintuitive to both sides. I don't want a good founder coming in trying to overdo it, and I don't want a bad founder coming in trying to fake it.
For sure, and I do appreciate your rawness and your openness, you're just an open book, I guess. And so my next question is, so attracting LPs to your fund, how was that process like if you were ever involved in it? And
Yeah, I mean, I was.
yeah.
So a lot of the first fund was our intros. I've look, I It's funny, people think I'm like a partier. I'm an antisocial person. I actually hate going out. I didn't do anything this weekend. It was Halloween weekend. I stayed in my house and worked and coded. I really don't, not a huge people person. And I think that's what makes me is I love to help people. When I say I don't like people, I mean I don't like big crowds. I love to have deep conversations with people. I love realness and authenticity and real, my conversations a lot of times involve psychology and sociology, philosophy. I really am I'm a deep thinker. I enjoy the art of thinking, the art of understanding. I think to me, business, I always say that business school should really be psychology school. Marketing is the art of manipulation at its core, right? It's the art of telling you that you want something you don't really want. And realizing these nuances to me, this is my opinion, is what I is the real truth of business and of understanding people, and that's what I choose to spend my time in. So when I develop relationships, a lot of my relationships with pretty prominent people are based on really deep mutual understanding. So when we were doing this, a lot of people and I'm incredibly blessed that this is the case. I really wanted to support it and jump on and I mean I we can't be th more thankful for the Winklevoss twins. Anthony Scaramucci, the minute we asked, just wrote us huge checks, and I'm eternally grateful for those people. People giving you a check is not necessarily about liking your idea; they like you, especially at this stage. It's not about our idea. We're I was a never managed a fund before, nothing of the sort, right? But people gave it, believed in it, and it wasn't. They're not believing in the thesis of the fund. They're believing in the person that they wanted to take the journey and be on the be alongside one of them on the journey, right? My company has advisors that are the co-founder of Netflix is an advisor. He's not signing people up for the idea necessarily, although that's a small part of it. But he went, but he's giving me the token of saying I want to be along your journey, and that's what means something to me. That means a lot more than oh, I like your idea. It's like, oh, that's great. Ideas or whatever. The fact that he's like, I want to be along your journey, that's what people should really be looking for.
So I just wanted to wrap up this conversation with your thoughts on the Netflix co-founder as an advisor you just mentioned, and what you've learned from him. What have been some of
Oh.
the biggest learnings?
So Mark Randolph, I don't even know how to put it into words. I mean, the man is the most amazing person I could have ever met. And I say that with amazing humility from just being so gracious that he took me in like this. It's not like look, the fact that some of those people even talk to anyone, talk to me, talk to anyone, of any age, really, is already an honor. And but what's so cool about Mark that I've never seen before is that Mark will waste his own time in order to make sure that you're learning from the experience. So he won't give you the answer when you call, right? He'll tell you to go do this homework or this thinking and come back with the answer and then come talk to him again. And he works you through it, even though you could see in his eyes that he knows the answer day one. Right when you came to him, he already knew the answer to the question. He doesn't give it to you because he wants you to mentally be working through how to problem solve. And he's showing you how to do it yourself. And that
is so cool to watch. And I've never seen, maybe other people have done that to me and I just didn't realize it. But he was the first time where I could see it in his eyes. Where I'm like, I know you know the answer to this question, but you're not giving it to me on purpose. And the fact that he's willing to do it at his own detriment of time, when he's super busy, he's got a million things going on, his family, kids, you know, like retired, like he could be doing a lot of other things in his time. But the fact that he will keep getting on the phone, knowing that he knows the answer, that he can just give me the answer, but wanting to teach me how to think is something I learned from him. And part of the reason why I try to answer people's DMs and I try to help people where I can is I genuinely feel that if I don't help people out that are going into entrepreneurship now, that I'm slapping Mark in the face every time. Like, he stuck out his arm for me and cared. If I don't do the same back to other entrepreneurs, then I'm putting his name in vain. I'm not doing right by him. And I never want that to be the case. I always want to make sure that I'm, you know, paying that forward. And there's a few people like that. Rich Miner, founded Android, has been one of those. Just never wavered in being supportive and being a friend and helping me through anything mentally. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, I'm human. I go through my own challenges. Everyone goes through their challenges. But those two have specifically been incredibly grateful, you know, of the help I did. I've helped out thousands of people without ever asking anything in return. And it's interesting to see who really is there, who unwavers. And those two people in particular, and Anthony Scaramucci, which he's a third, those three have been incredibly, 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 like, just supportive of everything and understanding. And I, you know, if the world was more of them, we'd be in a very, 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 very good place. So, you know, funny enough, the fourth one would be Sam Altman. Like, Sam is one of the nicest, most responsive people in the world. Like, he doesn't ignore a text no matter how busy he is. It's incredible. So, you know, props to those four.
For sure. I had an absolutely great time hosting you on the podcast today. And so do share, like, how the audience can get in touch with you, how they can pitch to Animal Capital, or, like, any, like, thing that you want to share. Now's your stage.
Well, Animal Capital is a little different. You know, you could there's an email, I think, info@animalcapital.com. Or that code, sorry. That people can reach out to. For me personally, you can email me. It's Michael, MICHAEL, @ ElysiumInnovations.ai. Or michael.gruen9@gmail.com if it's a personal thing, or DM. I do try to respond to everyone. It's funny, I've actually been going through the Sway from Sway days, because I you know, Sway was like a wild time and I didn't really have any free time. So now I try to go through every day, a couple of them, and I'm responding to people like 2 years later, which I feel kind of bad about. But, you know, I really do try to reply to everyone. And I'm honestly, it's humbling to anytime anyone cares about anything I've done. You know, it's an honor that I get to be considered anything, like the people you want to talk about. You know, I anytime there's been news about me that it wasn't exactly true or was portrayed a certain way, whatever it is, I sit back and I realize, like, I'm blessed to have the people even give a crap to talk about it. And I really, it truly feel that way. So I'm thankful that even you reached out, and I'm sorry it took a while to schedule. I'm shy. I don't like doing interviews. I really don't want to make the story about me. So I tend to be hesitant about them. It's nothing to do with you, it's nothing to do with the validity of what you do, but your persistence made me obviously need to change my mind and do it. And I wanted to support, but I also, you know, it's always like that challenge for me, like wanting to support but also thinking that I'm not really worthy of it, and like nor is it something that I crave. It's just, you know, it's an interesting place to be in. So I appreciate the persistence that you showed.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. And as you said, like, you aren't, like, so used to doing, or you don't really like doing interviews or podcasts. So, like, yeah, it's a really honor just to have you on the podcast today. And yeah, so thank you so much for your time once again, and have an amazing day ahead.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic, and India and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast, email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode, and hope you've learned something new.